All right, let's get started. This is the application management session. My name is Mark Florida. With me is Nilesh, and we're going to spend the next hour or so showing you what's new in Service Pack 1 of Configuration Manager, as well as what capabilities get lit up in the Windows Intune service. Hopefully, we'll get into kind of a number of different demos where we show you a whole bunch of new platforms that are supported and some rich experiences that go across those. Before getting into that, I just wanted to frame it up a little bit where what we want to do is sort of go over at the initial part of the session, what are some of those macro trends that are driving the investments that we're making on the engineering side, and then we will explain how Configuration Manager integrates with Windows Intune to extend the coverage of devices that can be supported in terms of providing applications to end users. And then hopefully we get into a whole bunch of good demos where you can kind of see those capabilities light up for yourself. So to take kind of a step back or to bubble it up to a really high level, what the kind of trends that we have seen now for a few years that are coming to fruition in the product changes are that, you know, we obviously still have full-featured PCs. You know, it's just a deep feature set that exists on those. They're mature platforms. There's a number of processes that are developed around those. They tend to be devices that are purchased by corporations. They tend to have asset management requirements. They tend to have requirements around making sure they're secure. You can ensure uptime and productivity. But with users and users wanting to, you know, work from many different devices, they have a certain affinity to certain form factors, certain vendors of devices. It's no longer just a manage your PC type of world. Now what we look at it as we need to, as a management platform, be able to manage the user wherever the user goes, whether that's on a Windows device or whether it's on an iOS device. So what we're looking for is solutions where we can provide the capabilities that are needed to manage users wherever they go, be able to let the end users leverage these kind of newer, smarter, more modern devices that provide a nice, simple experience to accomplish a set of tasks that they're interested in accomplishing, while at the same time not getting in the way of that end user experience. They tend to pick these devices like a phone or an iPad for certain things around battery life or responsiveness to being booted up. So we as a product need to make sure we can provide those management capabilities so that you can make sure that you can maintain your compliance and regulatory reasons, but at the same time be able to provide the capabilities to the end user so that they can be productive from these devices. So when we look at application management, what we see is that there's obviously new trends in the actual apps that have to be supported. With Windows 8, there's obviously the new addition of the new application model that they have, the, you know, the Windows 8 apps where they have an AppX file. They also have a Windows Store for end users to be able to get apps. But the challenge of managing applications has moved away from just managing MSIs or script executables. It's gone beyond that into managing a plethora of different application types across these different platforms. So what we looked at was how can we deliver a solution that provides an ability to, again, manage to the user without making it overly complex to run a IT operations group that has to deliver applications to users. And what we looked at was trying to provide a consistent experience to deliver applications to end users and then have the IT administrator really just have to focus on understanding, you know, slight variations of the different content types, you know, whether it's a whether it's the AppX file for your Windows RT device or whether it's your MSI file. We wanted that same similar experience when you're creating an application, when you're deploying an application, and I hope that you see that come through when we get into some of the demos. The other scenarios that we looked at too were around, you know, compliance, making sure customer data is secure. And that's where we get into scenarios like, well, what if an end user wants to switch a device, or they want to go sell their existing device, or they're giving their device to another coworker, or just frankly gets lost or stolen. Sort of that, you know, what we see more in these sort of smarter devices is that there isn't a single model like there might be with the PC scenario where somebody turns in their PC and it can be flattened and formatted. Instead, we need capabilities to be able to reach out to that device and wipe it. And sometimes wiping those devices is too intrusive. you know, doing a full device format, if you will, putting it back to a factory reset, just maybe not acceptable. You know, how bad would it be if somebody's losing their pictures, for example, when all they wanted to have was to have a corporate app removed? So as we sort of look at protecting a device, we look at it as how do we protect the apps and the data that exists on those devices? And I think you saw some of that if you watched the day one or the keynote that Brad did, where he showed the ability to use RMS and some other technologies to really protect the actual documents that were on these devices versus going with an approach where you're trying to secure and control the entire device. And then lastly, I hit on this before, is that it's the end user experience. As we sort of try to enable users to be productive from all these devices, we need to do it in such a way that helps to empower the end user while at the same time taking care of all the compliance requirements that most of you are here to uphold for your organization. So it's a fine balance. How do you make it easy for the end user? How do you make it a good experience? How do you sort of embrace the reason that the end user wants to work from these platforms, but at the same time provide that compliance experience and all those other controls that are needed for an IT organization to meet their requirements? So the way that we look to do that is through the integration of Configuration Manager and Windows Intune. Now, what we did is we kind of took a step back and we realized that Configuration Manager has a fairly large deployment footprint. A number of customers, I'm sure there's lots of you in this room or in other sessions this week, where you're already using Configuration Manager. You're using that typically to manage your traditional desktop, laptops, and what I mean by that is sort of your Intel chipsets. And we previously extended the product to support Mac OS as well. But it's more those sort of on-premise devices. So what we wanted to do was be able to allow you to manage these more modern devices, Windows RT, iOS, Android. And what we did is we took a step back. We realized that you already have a significant investment in Configuration Manager. We then looked at these modern devices, and we looked at those as being devices that tend to connect from anywhere. They might have a cell connection. They might be more mobile, so they connect to Wi-Fi remotely. So we just architecturally looked at it as what's the best way to connect to those devices? And the best way is the cloud. It takes care of a lot of the network challenges that can exist. It provides coverage for where those users are moving towards. So when we kind of looked at that from sort of what's the best architecture to align to, we then looked at it, what's the best for customer experience. And we didn't want our customers to have to work between two different products. We wanted there to be a single experience, a single pane of glass, if you will, for the end user to be able to get capabilities and for the administrator to have a single experience for them to deliver those capabilities. So what we'll show you a lot of is sort of the management experience is coming through a unified approach where you're in the Configuration Manager console. You're delivering applications to a user in the Config Manager console. But under the covers, if you will, we are handling the kind of the technical separation. So if you're trying to, let's say, deliver an application to a user, they might very well have a Windows RT device. They might very well have a Windows x86 device. From an administrator's standpoint, you're doing all of that in the Config Manager console. And our systems under the covers are sending information to either the cloud, Windows Intune, or to your on-premise server, Configuration Manager. And that policy and those app content files, those are being handled for you, so that you don't have to sort of manage two different products at the same time. So with the application model, and I go through this fairly quick because this has been something that we've talked about for a few years now. What we created to help accomplish this is what I call the application model. And what it is is really a containment. It's really a way to say, this is an application. This is what the user really wants at the top. You know, they want Adobe Reader. They don't really want MSI version of Adobe Reader, the AppV version of the Reader. That's something, we care more about as systems administrators. So what we've done is created this sort of higher level object called an app. That's what the user wants. That's what they see in a self-service experience. But then what we can do is kind of hide the technical complexities in terms of whether it's an MSI or a script or an AppX file underneath that application. That way, you as the administrators can deploy this application out to your users. Your users just see this application, they click install, and then our client, our service, will determine what's the best form in which to install that application. We have a concept, too, which is important, which is that when managing applications to users, we have a concept of user-to-device affinity. And it's a concept of how do we know what is a user's primary machine? If you have users who are moving between different, for example, I have a desktop at my work, I have a laptop as well, but then I log into demo systems. You know, I don't want my apps to necessarily install on this demo system that I'm using today, so that's not my primary machine. And so what we have is this ability to look at, and this is something you can certainly configure, is look at characteristics of where users are logging in, how frequently they're logging in, or even you can manually assign it, the sort of concept of what somebody's primary machine is. So it's this sort of, it's this union of being able to deploy applications to users, being able to express how you want these apps to install. You know, one of the key ones is install on a primary device, but you could have technical rules as well, like install only if there's a certain amount of memory. And what we do is we provide hopefully a simple experience to the end user where they're just clicking install, but we can take all of your intent, we can get that out of a lot of the custom scripting that had to be done in the past, like in 2007, and we can put that all into the application model and let the application model do the logic to figure out how to install it. So what kind of some significant changes that came in SP1 in terms of the application model was support, again, for just a litany of new device types, and then once we onboarded those different device types, there became a necessity to support the different application types that come with those. So with Windows RT, there's AppX. With Windows Phone, there's obviously a different format for those as well. Same with iOS, Android, and then macOS has a number of different packaging standards. The other thing to note, too, is that we realized that deploying just the actual binaries themselves isn't enough. A lot of these more modern platforms have stores. You know, we obviously have the store for Windows. There's a store for the Windows Phone. There's obviously the Apple Store, Google as well. So what we do is provide the ability to link applications to a store. The main advantage of doing that is it provides you a consistent way to deliver applications to your users, to present them a set of choices that's very consistent without having to direct them to multiple different stores. You can provide sort of a storefront, if you will, for your enterprise where you can list all of your applications. But if it's, take for example, let's say Skype, something that exists in the Windows Store. You and your enterprise catalog can say, here's Skype, it's something I might recommend you to use. But when the end user says to install it, what it does is it redirects the end user to the actual Windows Store to complete the installation. So in terms of the end user experience, what we have is we have a number of different ways. And if you're familiar with Config Manager 2012, this was our kind of first foray into providing a self-service experience with a good kind of quality end user feel to it. What we did is we created an application catalog, which was a role, it was a service that you stood up with a web front end. We've moved beyond that as we started to adopt different platforms. The main design premise we looked at was that if end users are buying these platforms, you know, they're buying an iOS device, they're typically buying those for certain characteristics, certain feel. You know, they want an iOS device. They don't want something that looks like a wedged experience or an experience that we sort of forced into an iOS model. So what we've done is we've developed different self-service portals, if you will, as separate applications that can be installed on these different devices. So for example, you can see the picture in the middle for a Windows Phone device. That has a lot of characteristics that are very similar to if you were just looking in the normal Windows Phone app itself. Or we have a Windows RT experience that has a consistent feel with what you might expect to see in the Windows Store itself if you just happen to be using that as well. So that's that underlying design premise of trying to embrace the core reason why somebody selected this platform. We didn't want to come back with some experience that was jarring, that didn't actually tie to one of the reasons why they, you know, purchased, why they like to use these platforms. So deploying applications, I'm going to hand it over to Nilesh.
Thanks, Mark. So let's talk about Windows 8 style applications. How many of you have already starting to develop line of business applications which are Windows 8 style applications? Okay, so you have come to the right place, because before you start developing those applications, there are a few things that you would like to know. First of all, Windows 8 apps are immersive applications. They provide great experience for the end users, where you can have live tiles updating the status of the applications. From the IT perspective, it's great because it lets you get out of the DLL hell that MSI and EX is posed to you. The application model is very isolated. The data is containerized. So it's very easy for admins to service these applications without having to worry about, oh, if I install this application, what else it's going to break? So, that's an evolution that is happening on the modern application front. We can see this in Windows, we can see this in iOS, we can see this in Android, where applications are going to be more and more isolated and sandboxed so that security of those applications can be maintained. At the same time, app compat also becomes less of a challenge. So second point is, there are some dependencies that you need to be worried about when you deploy Windows 8 applications. There are not too many dependencies there. The dependencies are listed here. There are three dependencies right now. So if you are going to deploy these applications to end users, then you have to package these dependencies with the app itself. And we help you with that. And the third thing is, there are multiple ways of getting Windows 8 applications. The most known way is, you go to Windows Store, download the apps, discover the app, search for the app, download the app, and install. For that, you need Microsoft account. So it's a dependency that end user has. They have to have Microsoft account in order to access the store. We have heard from our customers that that becomes challenging in the enterprise environment, because those Microsoft accounts cannot be controlled by IT. So there are a few challenges there, but we are going to work on it in the next few months and years to solve these problems. The second way to install these applications, through Configuration Manager, you can either point those applications in the store and deploy them in the self-service portal. So as Mark said, Skype could be published by the IT admin and deployed to the self-service portal, so the end user can go there, discover Skype, that becomes a discovery mechanism, and then when they click on that application, the installation experience is driven through Windows Store. We could do something very similar for iOS and Android as well. I'll come to that later. So that's one way. And the second way, so suppose you are building a line of business application, which is Windows 8 style. The first question that IT admin is going to ask, why should I publish this application in the public store? So if you are not willing to publish that application in the public store, then you have to provide a way to sideload that application. What that means is, by default, Windows operating system is locked down. So it can only install applications that, the modern applications that come from the Windows store. So this is the first thing that you will have to do. Enable the side loading so that these enterprise applications, which are not hosted in the store, can be installed on that platform. So that is the third way you can install these side loaded applications. And there are a few problems here that I would like to call out. Since you made it to Tech at Madrid, I want to give you some tips there as well. You cannot side load an application which is hosted in store. For instance, if you have Skype published in store, you cannot just take download the binary and say, I will use that for disconnected install scenario or something like that. It will be a completely separate version of the application. So if you are working with the ISVs and you want to deploy these applications to tens of thousands of desktops, you will have to get a separate copy of that application, which is similar to what you do today, get an MSI or EXE from the ISV and then deploy it. And there are a few requirements that are there in order to sideload the applications. The first and foremost is, you have to basically allow for sideloading. This is an explicit step that you have to go through, which could be accomplished by turning on a registry key on Windows. It's allowed all trusted apps. That's a key. That's kind of the get out of the jail free card, so that sideloaded applications could be installed. The second point is, which is kind of common across MSI and EXEs as well, you need to sign those applications. You cannot install unsigned applications there. So you will basically use an enterprise cert, sign that Apex application, and then deploy it. So that cert has to exist on those devices, which is not a new process. I think most of the IT admins are pretty much familiar with that. You have to deploy the enterprise signing cert onto all those machines before these applications can be installed. The tricky part is the sideloading key required? There are a few scenarios there. If you're dealing with domain joined machines with enterprise queue of Windows, then it's a very easy task. By default, you could enable this. You just have to enable the allow trusted apps setting, and then your machine is provisioned for sideloading. If you're not using the machine in the domain joined configuration, then you have to get a sideloading key. There are multiple ways to do that. If you're running, if you have a VL agreement with Microsoft, you can go to volume licensing portal, and with other applications or entitled applications that you have, you can now download your sideloading activation keys as well. They come in the packs of 20 or 100 activations at a time. Configuration Manager can help you deploy those in the other scenarios where, suppose you have RT machine. It's not domain joined. There is no way you can use GP on those machines. How do I even activate sideloading? In that case, we step in. Configuration Manager enables this functionality through our MDM integration with Intune. From Windows Server perspective, if the machine is domain joined, then you can't really use. Actually, you don't really need the sideloading key. It is enabled. If it is non-domain joined, all bets are off. So that's just the basics of sideloading. So what is the workflow for creating Windows 8 application, certifying it, and then deploying it, giving it to IT admin in order to deploy? So these are the steps that are involved here. First of all, enterprise has to purchase the application from ISV or build their own, check the platforms that are supported, which this is important because these applications can work on x86 platforms as well as ARM platforms, which is the RT version of Windows supports. So you need to identify that platform. Then the second step is you have to certify your line of business application, which is always a good thing to do. If you're going to host an application in Windows Store, then Windows Store or publishing mechanism takes care of this certification. They will run certain set of tools to make sure that the application is secure, it's not doing some, they can give you quality feedback also. So similar set of tools are available in Visual Studio that you can run to make sure that there are no glitches. Actually, it helps you with the security of that application as well. The third thing is, once you have certified the application, you need to sign it. You need to sign it with Enterprise Cert. That's a step that we talked about earlier. And you have to remember, when you sign it, the publisher name must match the certificate publisher name. Otherwise, the application won't install. And the last one is, once you do all these things, then you can hand over that package. The devs can hand over that package to IT admin, and they can seamlessly deploy that through Configuration Manager. So deployment steps there. First one is a sideloading key. So you can go to volume licensing portal of Microsoft, download a set of sideloading keys if you really need them based on the configuration that you are using your machines. Enterprise SKU with domain join, no need for sideloading key. Rest of the SKUs, you will have to evaluate the need for sideloading keys. Once you deploy the sideloading keys, there are multiple ways to do that. If it is a domain joined PC, you can use GP, and you can use SCCM to deploy a script to enable this. Once you do that, code signing certificate, that's the one that you have to deploy in the trusted root authority of the machine store. Then you have to create the deployment type there, deployment type using Configuration Manager so that the Apex application could be packaged. And then last step is to deploy the application. So there is a new deployment type that we have added in 2012 SP1 version of Configuration Manager. This is the Apex DT. And admin can very easily create that just like they can create MSR, EXE packages there.
this particular DT supports native application model features, so we try to extract a lot of information from this Apex package to make the packaging and authoring experience very seamless and easy for the admins. Some of the things that we can select are listed here. With that, I'll hand over to Mark to demo how do you deploy Windows 8 applications on Windows 8 PCs.
Great. Thanks, Nilesh. So what I want to do is kind of walk you through what it looks like in the console first. So, oh, that's not showing up well. Just one second, please. Hopefully this works on the fly. Settings. All right, that's a lot better. Okay, so what I'm going to do is just walk you through sort of the anatomy of the application model. I'll specifically kind of go into an example of what a Windows 8 application looks like. And then I'm going to kind of do the old little bit of a boring demo on the client. The reason it's boring is it's the x86 variety of machines. And then later, Nilesh has a series of demos where he's going to go through RT, iOS. That's kind of some of the newer stuff. So I'll spend most of my time focusing more on just the kind of administrative tasks. So to start out with, what I want to do is just create an application. And what we have here to show is there's obviously just a longer list than in the past. We support a variety of different types of applications that you can now create, as we've talked about before. What I'm going to do then is create a Windows 8 app package. So what you do is very similar to an MSI application. You just find the content source that you want to look at. So with what I'm going to do is just extremely similar to an MSI file, where we're reading that MSI file to extract certain information to sort of help with the creation of the app itself. I'm just doing that with the AppX file. So I picked this Microsoft Dynamics file that I had previously just downloaded. And from that, you can see number of information that's been extracted from that file. What's the version of the application? What's the name that's registered against it? Who the publisher was? This is just an internal version that Microsoft has. That's why it says Microsoft IT. But again, kind of the goal is to just help you create that application. And then very similar to other apps, you can go in and customize a certain set of information when you're creating the application. Just one second. It's a demo machine, so it takes a little bit longer than normal. Once that app has been created, you'll notice it's the same. Scroll down here. It's the same application that you're used to seeing, whether it be MSI-based or not. The reason being is this is that higher-level object in the app model. It's not tied to the technology at all. You have all that same information, like how to actually show it to an end user, the application catalog. List of deployment types, since I created just the one for the AppX file, that's why there's only one listed. Also, you can then deploy this content out to distribution points. You can set up supersedence relationships, which if you're familiar with using this with the kind of previous version of the app models, or whether you're familiar with updates, it's just the concept is one of you're having to upgrade or replace a previous version of the app with a new version of the app. And that's, the application model, the point here is that it's the same. It's very similar, even though you're starting to adopt new technology types that you can now support. Now, where it gets different is down in the actual deployment type. The deployment type object has some similarities with other technologies that we supported before. You can provide a name, the content, very similar, providing a network path for us to be able to snapshot that content, eventually distribute it to a distribution point when you tell the system to do that. All of these application types, just because of the way the app model works, has a concept of a detection method. A detection method is something that is used to determine whether the app has been installed or not. That way we can operate in a desired state or a state-based model where we can continually reevaluate the client to see if the application is still there, if the intent still needs to be, if the intent to have the application installed can be checked on a regular basis and can be reinstalled. So that's the point of the detection method. What you'll notice with a lot of these kind of more modern application types is the detection method isn't something you can edit. It's something that is far easier to do than, let's say, an MSI file or a script-based deployment. Typically, with the MSI or the script-based deployments, you'd have to look at some combination, MSI product code, some regkey value, some file version. You'd come up with typically a more complex way of determining whether the app has been installed or not. For these newer form, these kind of newer apps, it's just much simpler. The OS itself has a sort of notion built into it to tell whether it's installed or not. That's why we surface the information for you to do troubleshooting, you know, be able to kind of look at client logs and things like that. But there's no need to edit it because there's, you know, you don't have to, you know, there's a consistent way that the actual OS installs the application. The other controls we have, you'll see vary our user experience. You may not always have those same type of knobs and controls that you have with some of the other application types like MSIs. But something that is fairly consistent is the notion of requirements. This is where you can set certain, you can look for certain conditions. Earlier I mentioned one of the primary conditions to look for is whether it's a primary machine or it's the primary user's machine. Or you can look at things like what you see here, which is just OS type, things that are kind of more laws of nature around an app. You know, you obviously can't install a Windows or an AppX file on a iOS device, for example. Or an app might require a certain amount of memory that just has to be there, or it just won't launch. The other thing that we do, too, with these apps, you heard Nilesh mention this just a second ago, is that certain applications or certain AppX applications require different core framework. So this is where we make that apparent, what that dependency is. And this is, for this example, it's you can see it here on the screen. So that's kind of the, you know, the deployment type in a nutshell. And throughout the other ones, you know, whether it's the newer Mac packages that we support or an iOS-based app, it's kind of the same narrative. It's a new technology. We tried to mirror a lot of the concepts because the application model works in a very consistent way regardless of the platforms. You know, you as the administrator, you target the app out. The client then gets a policy. The client evaluates the app model and is looking for, it's trying to pick a deployment type. So what it does is it looks to see are any deployment types installed or not. And if they're not installed, it'll then also race through the requirements, the dependencies, and it'll try to pick a deployment type that should be installed. And it will then, if it passes all those sort of upfront rules, it will then download the content, it will then install the application, and then the user is able to access it. So we have this sort of very consistent engine machine that runs on all these different platforms. So conceptually, it's easy to kind of move between the different technology types, and it becomes just more of a exercise of understanding the different packaging technologies, which is done outside the console. And the way you import them is like that first screen showed, which is you just interrogate the actual content, read the data from it, create the app, and off you go. So for the app, I had done one just for the sake of speed already. So here's an application called Sales Dashboard. It's just a AppX type of installation. What it has already is a deployment. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that the right one? Yep. So what we have here is, well, let me deploy it now. So what you can see here is the deployment experience for these apps are all the same. I'm going to deploy to all users. Then what I do is I select a distribution point. And what you'll notice here is since it's an Intune-based deployment, or the setup is for Intune as well, you'll see both the kind of Intune cloud distribution point as well as the one that we have for the primary site server. I'm going to put this as available because I want this to show up in the catalog. Working, created. And I'm going to give it just a minute to let it work down to the client. So I want to show you something else really quick, which is we have different, kind of some new nodes that have shown up to kind of manage these newer applications. You know, Nilesh talked a lot about what sideloading keys look like. We have some new nodes where you can manage these sideloading keys in the product as well. So you can see it here. So now let me cross my fingers, and hopefully I didn't get burned for being Friday. Let's see if this guy shows up. Let me go to full screen. This is There we go. That made my heart race a little bit. So here's the Sales Dashboard app. Let me try installing it. So it's just doing kind of the normal thing that it would have done in the past, whether this be an MSI app. It's connecting up to the web service. It's, you know, it's pulling down that application model. It's ran the requirement rules, checked for the dependency framework, and now you can see up here at the top, it's downloading that software. And then if you, let me go over here. Hopefully we'll see it show up here in a second. And it worked, so that's great. So then the application gets installed, you know, very similar to just, you know, a normal installation that occurs. And then from this, the end user is able to, if they want to, uninstall just natively from here. We surface these applications in Software Center as well, so they can go to Software Center just like they could an MSI application and uninstall them as well. So that's kind of, you know, what the Windows 8 app experience looks like. Let me cut back over to the deck here. Okay, so in terms of making this work, A, make sure you don't overprep a demo and then you discover something that wasn't set up the way you wanted to, but luckily it all worked out in the end. But assuming you're not doing a presentation, these are some more common troubleshooting items that you typically might have to look at. So there's, you know, there's a kind of a, as with all config manager, you know, systems that we have, we obviously have deep, robust client-side logs. The thing that we put a lot of time into investment into is our in-console monitoring. So we have a node in the console for you to be able to look at your deployments, be able to tell how successful they are, not successful they are, and then if you do run into errors, we've tried our best to make those errors something very easy to understand. We've made improvements, so as people start to use the application more and more, and as people file feedback, bugs, design change requests, we've taken those into SP1 and into our R2 release, so we're continuing to kind of make that experience of in-console monitoring better. With that said, however, there's some things that, you know, probably best to, you know, that eventually would need to be checked on the client. So the client-side logs obviously are a good place to start with that. But one of the key kind of stumbling blocks is just making sure that that registry key at the top has been set. It's a quick check. It's something that's kind of easy to somewhat stumble on. But it's a quick way to just to verify that the apps should be allowed to install themselves. The other thing is to actually look at the cert, making sure the cert has been placed down on the client so that you can actually run those apps can actually be installed since they are signed by a particular cert. I know for myself I would stumble on that when we first developed this feature a lot, just kind of prepping through demos or trying the feature out once it got coded. So that's an easy way to it's easy to troubleshoot. You can just open the cert, snap in, and browse on a client to make sure that that's done. And then the last thing is that it's the third thing on this list, is if in doubt, just run the actual installation using that commandlet at the bottom. That way you can kind of cut Config Manager out of the loop. You just have the actual AppX binary, force the installation yourself. That way you know, is this a Config Manager problem or is it a Windows problem? And if it happens to install this way, you know it's a Config Manager problem. There's something that's probably more Config Manager centric. However, if it doesn't install, then you're probably with one of those two items above. You know, the signing cert's missing, or there's something mechanical on the actual Windows client itself that needs to be addressed. So to kind of transition just a little bit away from the Windows 8 apps, what the Windows team implemented was something that was called metered network support. This is the ability to look at a given network that you might be connected to, like a 3G or a 4G network, basically something that you're paying for, you know, thus the metered part of the name. And the idea is that as there's more and more use of these connections that cost money, we didn't want to have customers be in a situation where they all of a sudden get a bill at the end of the month or, you know, whatever that scenario is, and they're kind of shocked or surprised to see that their charge was much, much higher than expected. So that's something that you'll see there. We call it bill shock. And the idea was that with Configuration Manager, we wanted to provide the administrators the ability to help prevent that bill shock from occurring. So we have the kind of options when you're doing a deployment to prevent basically the pull of large content, anything that's using our bits transfer service, so that's content, large policies, things like that, from actually running across a network that's metered. With that said, however, again, it's kind of this balance that I talked about earlier between what the end user wants, what the administrator wants. So while the administrator can set it up to say, don't transfer over the network, there's also the ability for you to allow the end user themselves to override that option. You know, basically let the end users, you know, get an experience where they say, great, I don't care that I'm going to get charged a lot. I'd like to install the app as well. That scenario plays out more if it's a personal device. If you happen to be paying for the data connection yourself, that just may be fine with you, that you're okay using your own data plan for that installation of the app or installation of whatever that large content might be. So with meter network support, which, you know, again, kind of summary goal was provide you with the necessary controls so that you don't upset your end users or whoever's paying the data bill, but at the same time, provide a way, if you'd like, for the end user to be able to work around that limitation or to opt into using the data plan for their own, you know, needs if they want to do that themselves. So what this is just kind of a summary of, you know, how to think about, you know, different ways to sort of configure this feature. What we have is the ability to, you know, allow you to, you know, block while somebody's roaming. We also have the ability to, you know, as I mentioned before, the user to actually initiate the download. And then if we happen to run into a deadline, like let's say it's a patch scenario or something like that where you need to enforce a security update, there's the ability to say, well, you know, I know they're on this metered network for a while now, but I really need to make sure this system is secure, so I'll bypass this limitation for right now and just make sure that the update gets installed. The way that you manage these settings, you can see the little screen snippet at the bottom. You probably, hopefully can recognize that. That's just your normal computer agent settings configuration that you use. So you set this up and deploy it out to your Windows clients, and they manage it from there. So I'm going to hand it back over to Nilesh.
Great. So now that we have seen how to deploy Windows 8 applications on PCs, let's talk about deploying applications to mobile devices. So here are a couple of scenarios from a mobile device perspective. You can have BYOD devices coming into your corporate environment, and you want to make the end users productive on their devices anywhere in the world, right? So in that case, there are a few options that you have from the scenario perspective. The first scenario is if the, you know, if the application is there in the self-service portal, which is user-targeted, so Mark will get set of applications which are useful for maybe he's in finance group, and then he gets those set of applications through self-service portal. That's the primary scenario. These could be line of business applications which are side-loaded. The second scenario is, there are some applications that we want to publish from different stores, like iTunes Store or Windows Store, but these are productivity applications that we think Mark will benefit from. And the last scenario is, once we are doing these deployments for applications, I want monitoring for these applications as well. So these are the basic scenarios for application deployment for mobile device management. There are multiple platforms listed here, and the capabilities that we have across these scenarios are also listed. So with the SP1 release of Configuration Manager, now you can manage your mobile devices as easily as you manage your PCs. The thing that you need to do in order to do that is we need to set up Windows Intune subscription and connect Configuration Manager, which is on-prem service installation, to the cloud-based Windows Intune service. How many of you had a chance to attend Windows Intune overview session this week? Okay, quite a few. So we went over some details of how to do that. You can go back and look at that session as well, which will provide you some scenarios and pointers of how easy to do that and how easy is it to set up the Windows Intune connector to accomplish these scenarios. So this is going to be the workflow that I'm going to describe. So you have Windows RT and iOS devices. There is a cloud service, which is Windows Intune. There are a lot of moving pieces there. And on-prem side, you have roles from Configuration Manager. There is a Windows Intune connector site role which is set up so that it can talk to the cloud service that is Windows Intune. So what happens is first IT admin publishes new application. It goes to the primary site, and through Windows Intune connector site role, it can go to the cloud DP. And Mark showed you as part of the demo that you can publish the application not only to your on-prem DPs, but cloud DP, which is the Windows Intune DP. Once that happens, the application is sitting in the cloud. Actually, we use Azure Blob Storage to host that application. And then the application policies also sync down, and they are stored in Windows Intune service in the cloud. So when the end user tries to log into company portal, what they get is the initial Intune login token. And at that time, Windows Intune can determine, oh, this is Mark, and here are a set of applications which are available for that user. So they will get a list of applications in their self-service portal which they can install. And then the end user can take action on this, request an application. So I'm going to show you the demo of this very shortly. And at that time, the app policies flow down to those devices, and then it triggers the application install request. One thing to notice here is iOS platforms as well as Windows platforms, they do not directly allow you to install applications in the BYOD scenario. You have to go through their notification services, so APNS or Windows notification service to trigger the install. In Windows, we have a light agent which is called OMA DM agent, Open Management Alliance Device Management. It's an open protocol based agent that allows you to install applications settings at the same time preserve the end user experience. You can't really run login scripts or anything that can bog down the end user experience. So in order to play with that agent has to interact with the notifications service. So in case of iOS, we just use the pure MDM stack that Apple provides, and that stack is also accessible only through Apple's APNS. So this is the point that I wanted to make. So after the notification service is communicated from Intune saying, hey, notification service, send this app install command to the end user's device that triggers the install. Now that agent is going to query for application packages from the cloud. These are hosted in Azure. They will flow down and get installed on the machine. So this is a very complex workflow, but it is very seamless workflow also. It doesn't take that long from the time the user clicks install application to get the application down to that machine and getting installed. Okay. So that's the last step. So once the application gets installed, then you have to report. So the agent can come back to Windows Intune service, report back the status of the installation, failure, successes, and then we feed that status back through the Windows Intune connector into the Configuration Manager databases, and admin gets the reporting on that. So basically, admin doesn't need to deal with Windows Intune in the backend at all. All the IT admin is going to do is just look at his Configuration Manager console and get the reporting for both PC-based installs as well as mobile device-based installs. So there are a few things that you have to remember for sideloading applications on RT. I'm just going to, in the interest of time, speed up here because you saw very similar steps that Mark showed for Windows 8. Since RT is also Windows platform, so the steps are pretty much similar there. Except for the sideloading key stuff, where you have to purchase sideloading keys, or you have to get access to sideloading keys through Volume Licensing Center. You have to deploy the code signing certificate, and that can be done through Configuration Manager as well, very easily done. And then you have to enroll the Windows RT device for management. This is like installing Configuration Manager client on the machine, but it is baked into Windows OS itself. So if you have seen the other UDM sessions for Configuration Manager, we actually demoed enrollment. This is about making the OMA DM agent, which is on the Windows RT device, talk to Windows Intune service and get the machine cert provisioned identity established so that it can be managed. And after you do that, configurations, after you complete all the configuration steps, you create the DT and deploy the DT and deploy the application. So from the troubleshooting perspective, a lot of things can go wrong because this is a secure system. Whenever you are trying to do anything with the secure system, that it's additional overhead that gets introduced. So first thing that can go wrong is, you know, you can by mistake select ARM-based architecture only when you are trying to deploy that Apex package on x86 as well. So be aware of that problem. The second thing is you need to make sure the sideloading is enabled. The quick and dirty way to check that is on the Windows RT machine, you can run slmanager/dlv command, and it can spew out the sideloading status. In this case, you can see the highlighted portion there, license status. If it is licensed, that means sideloading key is enabled. If it is not licensed, something is wrong. You need to figure out what's wrong. Then you have to make sure the code signing certificate is installed properly. And last step that Mark also described is, after you do all these things and still you are having problems, just install that application manually using PowerShell commandlet. And if it installs, that means there must be something wrong with Configuration Manager, and you can pick up your phone, call us, and we'll try to troubleshoot that problem for you. And last is, you know, there is a troubleshooting blog also available where all these instructions are listed. You can look at that blog. There are a lot more details that I'm going to show you also. They are listed on that blog. The thing that makes it very difficult for troubleshooting this on RT platform is the extensive logging that we are used to having on Windows platform is not really there because we don't really run our full client, full Configuration Manager client. So that's what makes it challenging. Okay, so let's switch back to the demo. So this is about app deployment with Windows RT. I'm going to switch to my Windows RT machine here. Second, six. So here is Windows 8 RT machine, and you can see the self-service portal that I talked about. It is available from Windows Store itself. You can download and install it after you enroll your machine for management. So you can see all the applications that are published and available for me as a user. It also shows you all the devices that are associated with me and managed by Windows Intune and Configuration Manager. So in this case, you can see an application called Expenses. There are a few things that I want to mention. Mark talked about application model. So consider a scenario where there is a line of business application, which is the My Expenses application. It is available on multiple platforms. So Mark could have created multiple DTs there. I have the Configuration Manager portion of it, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to show that. But there are multiple DTs available. One DT for Windows 8 application, Apex package, one DT for iOS, one DT for Android. Just imagine that there are three DTs available as part of this application. So on the expenses, if I click there, it will show me it's published by Contoso, so it's a line of business application. Since I have tried this multiple times today, it's shown as, it's already installed, so you can reinstall. So a few things that I would like to point out and show you. The installation is kicked off by something called MDM agent. This is not a Configuration Manager agent, but this is the inbox OMRDM agent on Windows client. So once I hit install there, I'm going to show the MDM agent showing up in the task manager. The other thing that I will show you, there are two registry keys, and this information is available on the blog for your reference. There's an MDM node in registry where you can see the status of the enrollment as well as whether everything is enrolled and basically talking to Windows Intune service properly or not. So this is the registry setting that will be interesting. The other registry setting that will show you the status of the job to make sure the troubleshooting can, you can easily see what's happening there. There's a job ID key that will have the troubleshooting information once the application install kicks in. So let's go back and kick off the install here. I need to be quick here. I will start the installing expenses. You saw that message there. If I come back to my MDM job ID key and refresh, I see the job queued there. You can see the DPE expenses, that is the expense report package getting installed and queued up. I don't know whether MDM agent is still going to be there because the installation could be very quick. It's a small package that can be streamed down very easily and quickly from Azure. So let me go back and check the status. Still installing, so I should be able to see that. Bear with me for a second here. Refresh the key there. And it lists the management scale unit. It is downloading the package from now. There is a MSU entry there. And let's go back. It's still showing it's installing. It should take anywhere from, you know, based on the size of the package, anywhere from a couple of seconds to 5 minutes to get this installation done. And once the package is installed, it will show up on, yeah, it's there. So my expenses, it's there now. I can launch that. And I'll give this application to Mark as well so that he can file his expense report for his trip to Madrid. So it was a very quick install. You saw it within less than 5 minutes, the entire workflow took place and the package was installed from Azure into the mobile device management. And I have a Windows Intune account that is set up for Europe data center. So basically, when you create the Windows Intune subscription, you can create it in different zones so that we can respect the compliance and privacy requirements. So this is a TechEd Europe account. So all this communication happened with the Dublin data center. So, okay, so going back to the slides now. So that showed the portion where we installed the application on Windows RT. Now let's look at the steps that are involved for installing applications on iOS devices. So I'm going to demo the iPad installation of application as well. There are a few steps that you have to be aware of when you want to create a line of business application on iOS platform, which are kind of similar to what we saw on Windows side as well. There is an iOS developer enterprise program that you have to sign up for. And then once you do that, you have to get a distribution certificate and profile from Apple. There are a couple of steps involved in that. You have to sign up with the dev program, then you have to hand over your certificate to Apple. They sign it, they give you back the certificate as well as the management profile. And once you have that, then you can start installing applications. Remember, as I said, this application install happens through Apple notification service. So that's why you have to do all these setup steps, so that Apple recognizes you as an enterprise and then you can leverage their APNS. Then once you do the configuration steps, then and these are listed beautifully in the Configuration Manager console, and there is a lot of help also, so I won't go into that. Then you can sign and build and sign the application, prepare the manifest file that goes with the application. Once you do that, then you can go back to Configuration Manager console, add a DT again for iOS application so that, you know, my expenses for iOS could be linked to the my expenses application. So While I'm at the iOS application setup steps, I can cover the Windows Phone 8 steps also, which are also similar. There are a few more nuances there. Windows 8, also you have to sign up for the developer account. The second requirement that Windows 8 has is you have to have a semantic cert in order to install line of business applications which are sideloaded onto that platform. So you have to get this semantic cert. And then once you have that, you basically export the PFX file and then upload it to Configuration Manager. Or there is a tool called AET Generator that you can use to spit out the AET and then upload that thing to Configuration Manager console. This is kind of a sideloading kind of a step for Windows Phone 8 as well. And we have documented these steps. We heard from our customers that it's very difficult to try out these steps. So maybe 2 weeks back, we released a tool on Download Center that can give you access to a sample AET as well as sample signed applications. So if you are just trying out Windows Intune subscription and trying it out with Windows Configuration Manager, you could download that package and all these pre-provisioning steps will be much more easier than to get, you know, talk to Symantec and spend a week to get their certificate down and try it out. Once the last step is again, as in iOS, create the app model with the package once it is there, and you know, the basic flow is going to happen. There are two things that we have to remember. One is a deep linking flow where you just link to an application in the application store that iOS has, iTunes Store or Windows Phone Store, and then that gets installed. And the second flow is about the sideloading application, which is also a similar flow. So let's look at the flow here. You can when you publish this application into Configuration Manager, it is basically packaged with the application policies, goes to the Windows Intune Service Cloud, and sits there. Once users try to access this log into their self-service portal, they can basically pull this Windows Intune login token, and based on that, we know user like Mark has access to this set of 5 or 10 applications. These applications start showing up in their self-service portal. Then they can request an application from that list. If it is a if it is an application that is already hosted in the consumer store, we point them to the consumer store, the public store, and then the install is taken over. The whole experience is store install experience. At that time, we are kind of out of the loop there. They can download and install. So let's see a quick demo of installing an application on iOS. So continuing on the scenario, what we have here is the end user portal on iOS. Okay, let me log into that. Once I log into this portal, the step that I showed in the workflow, it shows me all the applications that are available for me to install. Let me choose a business category here because I'm looking for line of business application. There is an expenses for iOS. This is the DT that was linked to the expenses application. So I can click on that. It will give me the description of that application and option to install this. This is a sideloaded application. It's going to take a couple of minutes to do this installation. In the background, what is happening is we are actually notifying the notification service on the Apple saying we need to trigger this install. So immediately we get a warning here saying server manage.microsoft.com is about to install that application. Do you want to continue? This is specific to iOS platform. They always will prompt the end user so that they can be in control of the install experience. So at this time, the package is getting downloaded from Azure. It's installing the package right now. There is an icon already. You can see that expenses icon there. It's going to take just a couple of minutes. That's it. The installation is done. You can click on that, and the expense manager is there. Okay. I don't want to turn the tablet because it's with the keyboard, but trust me, it is there. So that was a very quick demo for iOS application install. Now let's look at the Windows Phone experience for the same. So we have a very similar self-service portal on Windows Phone as well. I will go back home and change all my passwords now, but bear with me for a minute here. So it's the same company IT portal. You can see the business category here. This is the beauty of app model. The same application is getting published on multiple platforms, is available on multiple self-service portals. And when all these installs happen, the installation monitoring is going to happen at the application level. So IT admin will get installation report for My Expense apps, and he can get the drill down into which, how many iOS installs, how many Windows 8 installs, how many Windows IT installs. So instead of creating 10 different packages to manage these applications across different platforms, it's managed as one application. That's the power of an application model. So let me click at business. I have a different application published to this. There is a sales dashboard application. And then I'm just going to install here. Install company app, yes, I want to install that. The similar warning that you saw on iOS, I get it here. It's going to download and install that application, and it's going to be available. Okay, it's in the collection, so if I scroll to... Under the covers, it's a marble maze because, you know, the sales projections are always everywhere, so... That's it. So that was the demo for slides. Is full. So that was the demo. That concludes the demo for iOS and Windows 8 modern device application install. So back to you.
Excellent. Thanks, Nilesh. So what I want to talk about now is just AppV. So specifically, it is with SP1, what we have done is support AppV version 5.0. The major new feature that has come out in AppV 5.0 is a feature that's called connection groups. If you're familiar with 4.6, what you're able to do is, in essence, sequence together two different applications. You could take, let's say, and this is to kind of tie to one of Wally's labs that he has, which is a really good lab to go through. It really describes this in very precise details, is that you're able to take, let's say, Word. You're able to sequence Word with another sequence of Visio, and you're able to, in essence, connect those two virtual bubbles together and have them interact. In 4.6, what was challenging is that it required sequence modification to occur to create that conduit between the two entities, between the bubble for Word and the bubble for Visio. What's happened in AppV 5.0, which is much better, is that you can now create that relationship, that conduit, if you will, between the Visio and Word example, all through the Config Manager console. So what's good about that is that typically what happens is people go off and they sequence applications, they then deploy those applications, and then they get calls to the help desk going, you know, how come this add-on doesn't talk, or how come this other app doesn't talk? And what would happen in 4.6 is you'd have to go find the person who does your sequencing, you'd have to get them to update the sequence, then you'd also have to update Config Manager and potentially modify dependencies and do additional work. Now with 5.0 and SP1 of Config Manager, it's as easy as just going into the console, finding our node that we created for virtual connection groups, and you just build that relationship yourself, and then that's it. Clients then update next time they go request policy, and you don't have to go contact that sequencer, and it makes it much, much easier to kind of manage your different apps that you have out there. So that's the biggest benefit of 5.0 in terms of the kind of Config Manager audience set. That's kind of a snapshot of what that node looks like in the console, which I can barely read on the screen, but it's there in the app management node. The other thing that we've supported, and kind of talked about this a lot earlier, was obviously the Mac OS support. So big thing just to support Mac OS, the ability to sort of push applications out to end users, be able to inventory, be able to manage those clients. The other thing that we didn't talk about much earlier was Linux. So Linux Unix support is primarily support for the server platforms. So a lot of the feature functionality that we support for Linux and Unix is really targeted around those server instances. So it's a lot more of the push, headless type of experience where you don't have a client UI because it's a server. So you're just trying to automate across multiple different servers that are that are available. So the Mac solution is definitely one we thought about for having end users, but the Linux Unix one, just at a kind of high level for you to keep a good frame of reference, is that it's more about managing servers. And I think what we have is a slide in just a sec where we talk about the different platforms that we support with Unix. But before we get into that, what we have is Mac OS in a little bit more detail. We support, I think it was 10.6, 10.7 at SP1. We then started to support 10.8. I believe that was in CU1. Is that right? Yes, thanks. Good. Wally's here to help me. So that's good. And then we support that list of different packaging types for doing application management. What we also support is the ability to do settings management, which isn't on here as well, the ability to do inventory, the ability to do a few other sort of features that are traditional in the Config Manager portfolio of features as well. What we do too is we have a utility to complete the packaging process. Config Manager isn't capable of it's just because we're a Windows type of platform. We need to take that file that gets created for the actual Mac, and you use a utility that we ship to, in essence, you can think of it as wrapping it. It creates a file called a CM Mac file. So you basically take the raw package, if you will, you run this utility, it spits out a CM Mac file, and it's the CM Mac file that you use to inject that, if you will, into Configuration Manager. So it's one extra step. It's not too laborious to do, but it is something to be aware of if you're just trying to get Mac up and working and you're wondering why the native format by itself doesn't work. Linux, Unix, this is kind of the long list of stuff. Let me see if it's on here animation-wise. No, it's not. So a better slide is if you go to the Config Manager overview session, what we did at the very bottom, and I just frankly forgot, so my apologies, was to add an additional box here for a new set of platforms that we're supporting. So if you're kind of looking at these slides after the fact, I would pull the one from the overview session because it has a more complete list of what platforms are supported. Again, the features are very much focused on data center type of scenarios. So a lot of push updates, push software. Think of them all scenarios that are enabled remotely without an end user actually going to those machines themselves. PowerShell. Key thing to kind of talk about here is we have obviously a bigger story with PowerShell. We have hundreds and hundreds of commandlets that got added in SP1, and then with cumulative update 1, we added more. With the R2 release, we'll add in more. Key thing here is that we have a number of commandlets that are very focused on application management. So what's neat about this is it really kind of helps create a good automation story, an easier automation story than what may have been in the past when you're using more of that WMI-based SDK that we had. You can use these commandlets to create applications, to use solutions like System Center Orchestrator to kind of manage the lifecycle of your application, all using PowerShell. The R2 functionality. So R2 at kind of a macro level is supporting more capabilities in terms of mobile device management. Tied to that is supporting new platforms such as the Windows 8.1 release, which obviously came out this week. So supporting those applications. The other thing that we did too is add the support for web applications. You can kind of think of this as just what the name implies. It's a website. It's a more modern application form that you might want to have. So you are in essence providing somewhat like a shortcut to your end users, so that again they have a consistent list of applications for their company, but they might get redirected to a website now versus getting redirected to the Windows Store or doing a native installation of a given app type. The other thing that we added too for mobile applications is as we sort of continue to evolve and get better at mobile device management, we move from what our SP1 Windows Intune story was, which was very much a bring your own device type of scenario, to now bringing capabilities where you can do more traditional control activities, such as the ability to push applications to mobile devices, which is very important, especially if you think about using these devices for more, work-centric, more task-based applications and processes that you have. And the other piece that kind of completes that story of being kind of more controlled is the ability for the administrator to uninstall applications from a given device as well. And lastly, I believe, is we've got new experiences on the client side. So native applications for Android, the iOS one too. Don't quite see it there. But the other thing is we've integrated in approval workflow as well for Windows Phone. And then at the very bottom is a really cool, neat new feature, the ability to trigger a VPN connection for a given application. So if you're on your phone, if you're like on a Windows RT device, for example, and you're trying to access an application that requires a back-end data connection to work, you just invoke that app, and then the VPN connection just automatically gets set up for you. So the end user doesn't have to go set that up. They don't have to go, how come I can't connect to my database? That's all done for them. And then in addition to that, as part of our settings management features, which we didn't cover here, we added the ability to define VPN connections and configure VPN connections automatically as well as a new feature in R2. So we're out of time, so I just wanted to thank everyone for attending the session. Strongly encourage people, if you haven't done it already, to go check out the hands-on labs, check out the decks after the session, and if you have any questions, please come up and we'll hang out for a few minutes. Thank you.